it's so hard nowadays with all the gangs and rap music.
What about robots?
Oh, they're everywhere.
I don't even know why the scientists make them.
Saturday Night Live ran this skit a few years ago. Some old ladies sipping tea and talking about life insurance. One tells the other that for $4 a month, she too can be insured against robot attack.
I'm Sam Waterston of the popular TV series Law & Order. As a senior citizen, you're probably aware of the threat robots pose. Robots are everywhere, and they eat old people's medicine for fuel.
Robots were supposed to be our friends, right? They were going to sit next to us in our flying cars, but what do we get instead? Automated marauders.
And when they grab you with those metal claws, you can't break free because they're made of metal and robots are strong.
The whole idea of robots seems like nothing but 50s retro kitsch nowadays. And yet now is the moment that robots are actually moving out of Isaac Asimov and the movies and into real life. You can buy a robot dog. There are robotic fish and vacuum cleaners and companions. So now what happens to the fantasies we've had? Novelists and filmmakers have used images of metal men to look at ourselves for a century. Can we still play with those ideas once robots are real? My guest today is the robotics pioneer Rodney Brooks. He's director of the MIT Artificial Intelligence Lab and, with his various teams, the creator of many robots, including the Roomba, the new intelligent vacuum cleaner. His latest book, Flesh and Machines, comes out next month in paperback. Rodney Brooks, welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks for having me here.
Let's start at the beginning. How does one define a robot?
Well, to me, a robot is a machine that perceives the environment in some way, senses something about the world, computes a little bit, and then does some physical action in the world, some sort of motion, some sort of moving about. And that's a sort of abstract definition, but I think that pretty much covers it. It leaves out a washing machine, because a washing machine doesn't move about in the world, but it includes the sorts of robots that we're starting to see come into everyday life right now, like the robot pets that you mentioned before. I'm not sure I want one of those robot pets, by the way. I prefer my flesh-based pets at home. Definition.
I think flesh-based companions in general, I think we still can agree that we like.
I think that's true, and I think that's going to be true for a long time. But we'll also have more and more robots around us, and we might start to put some of that silicon and steel inside our bodies.
When did you first get interested? This wasn't something that just began as an academic interest as a young adult. You've had an interest in robots for a long time.
Yeah, I grew up in the late 50s and early 60s in Adelaide, South Australia, and I had a couple of books. They were American books, How and Why Wonder books, one on computers and giant brains and one on robots. And they were so fascinating to me that I started trying to build computers and then robots right from when I was about 8 years old. The robots were a little too complicated because they had moving parts. So first off, I just tried to build computers. I'd never actually seen a real computer, but I started building them. And then by the time I was about 15 or 16, I graduated to building robots.
What was the first robot you built?
The first actual robot was one I called Norman. It was about 12 inches in diameter, wandered around on the floor of the house, would be attracted to a flashlight down a corridor, would head for it. And if it hit things, it would sort of move away from them. But it had this problem with four-legged chairs. It would sort of bumble its way into the chair and then get trapped between the four legs and could never find its way out.
And you've spent the rest of your professional life trying to overcome that problem.
Yeah, I've been having fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Presumably, as a boy, you read science fiction books, Asimov, Tom Swift, whatever, and saw movies in which robots were depicted, as we all did, especially in the 50s and 60s. Did those images and those stories inspire or shape how you began creating real robots in the world?
Well, I was certainly fascinated by Isaac Asimov's books. But the thing that had, I think, the biggest influence on me was 2001, A Space Odyssey, the mm-hmm. movie, when that came out. Because there was this, you know, fully intelligent being, Hal, who happened to be a murdering psychopath.
This sort of thing has cropped up before. and it has always been due to human error.
But apart from that, Hal controlled the spaceship, and it was an image of intelligence in a machine that I hadn't seen before, and it was a very prescient film in many ways. In fact, you know, Stanley Kubrick was the director. Marvin Minsky, who at the time was the director of the MIT Artificial Intelligence Lab, which I now direct, had been a consultant on the movie, and so a lot of his ideas for what a future intelligence or robot would be like got into that.
And of course, Hal wasn't a robot. I mean, he effectively was because he controlled everything on that ship, but he didn't move around. And that seems sort of the way that machine intelligence was sensibly or seriously depicted at the time, not as a robot, but as just a big computer.
Yeah, that's true, and it reflected the way research was happening in artificial intelligence at the time. Right back when Alan Turing, who was really the founder of computer science, when he'd written about robots in 1948 and 1950, he said, you know, we really should be building a humanoid robot, a robot with human form, but that's too complex right now. Let's just get computers to play chess and solve cryptographic problems. And they didn't worry about the stuff that a robot needs to be able to do, which is sort of see things and avoid hitting things and the sorts of things that a two-year-old can do. And that's some of those things that two-year-olds can do are still way beyond us in robotics even now.
Why were we, for so much of the 20th century, do you think, attracted to these stories about robots and to characters who are robots? Obviously, Star Wars, two of the most important characters in that saga are robots. What is it about them that appeal to us?
I think at some level we can see them as a reflection of ourselves. And you know, if you look at Star Trek with Commander Data, he's always trying to become more human. And a lot of the interesting stuff there is what makes something human. And he's lusting after that. You know, what makes our sense of humor, what makes our compassion, etc. So we see the robot as a reflection of ourselves, and we start to question or understand ourselves maybe a little better that way.